without wires. Of these phenomena, Tesla began in the next phase, the most fascinating for an audience are certainly those which are noted in an electrostatic field acting through a considerable distance. By properly constructing a coil, he continued, I have found that I could excite vacuum tubes no matter where they were held in the room. Referring to the work of J.J. Thomson and J.A. Fleming on the creation of a luminous thread within a vacuum tube, Tesla went on to discuss different methods of exciting vacuum tubes by altering the wavelength or the length of the tube. Setting up a fan as an analog and discussing the research of Preece, Hertz, and Lodge on the radiation of electromagnetic energy into the Earth and space, Tesla then displayed no-wire motors. It is not necessary to have even a single connection between the motor and generator, he announced, except perhaps through the ground, or through the rarefied air. There is no doubt that with enormous potentials, luminous discharges might be passed through many miles of rarefied air, and that, by thus directing the energy of many hundreds of horsepower, motors or lamps might be operated at considerable distances from stationary sources. Based on research conducted the year before, which had been prompted by the work of J.J. Thomson in propagating streams of electrical energy, Tesla expanded upon his high-intensity button lamp, a device that could dematerialize or vaporize matter. This arrangement, as we shall see, is precisely the configuration required to create laser beams. Most likely, Tesla displayed actual laser beams at this time. However, neither he nor the other scientists present at the time recognized the unique importance of the directed ray, as it was part of a combination of other lighting effects which resulted in the disintegration of the material that was being bombarded. There are two types of standard lasers which correspond to Tesla's work. One, a ruby laser, which reflects energy back to its source, which in turn stimulates more atoms into emitting special radiation, and two, a gas laser, which consists of a tube filled with helium and neon. High voltage is applied across two electrodes near the ends of the tube, causing a discharge to take place. In both instances, the excited atoms are contained in an enclosure and then reflected into one specific direction. They differ from ordinary flashlights not only because they emit a uniform wavelength of light, but also because there is a pausing, metastable state before the light is emitted. Tesla worked with lamps constructed in exactly these ways. The first he called a button lamp, the second an exhausted or phosphorescent tube. Their prime function was as efficient illumination devices. Their secondary functions were as laboratory apparatus for a variety of experiments. In one tube filled with rarefied gas, once the glass fiber is heated, the discharge breaks through its entire length instantaneously. Another bulb was painted on one side with a phosphorescent powder or mixture, and threw a dazzling light far beyond that yielded by any ordinary phosphorescence. A common experiment of mine was to pass through a coil energy at a rate of several thousand horsepower, put a piece of thick tinfoil on a stick, and approach it to that coil. The tinfoil would not only melt, but it would be evaporated, and the whole process took place in so small an interval of time that it was like a cannon shot. That was a striking experiment. Tesla also constructed a type of button lamp which could disintegrate any material, including zirconia and diamonds, the hardest substances known to exist. The lamp was, in essence, a globe coated inside with a reflective material, like the Leyden jar, and a button of any substance, most often carbon, which was highly polished and attached to a source of power. Once electrified, the button would radiate energy which would bounce off the interior of the globe and back onto itself, thereby intensifying a bombardment effect. In this way, the button would be vaporized. Tesla next described precisely the invention of the ruby laser over 5 decades before its reappearance in the middle of the 20th century. The description is quite explicit. In an exhausted bulb, we can concentrate any amount of energy upon a minute button of zirconia, which glowed with an almost intense light, and the stream of particles projected out was of a vivid white. Magnificent light effects were noted, of which it would be difficult to give an adequate idea. To illustrate the effect observed with a ruby drop, at first one may see a narrow funnel of white light projected against the top of the globe, where it produces an irregularly outlined phosphorescent patch. In this manner, an intensely phosphorescent, sharply defined line corresponding to the outline of the drop, fused ruby, is produced, which spreads slowly over the globe as the drop gets larger. A more perfect result, used in some of these bulbs, involves the construction of a zinc sheet, performing the double office of intensifier and reflector. The inventor's talk ended with the speculation that with improvements in the construction of long-distance cables, per his suggestions, telephony across the Atlantic would soon be possible. It is significant to note that at this moment he did not yet envision wireless transmission of voice, but rather wireless transmission of intelligence, i.e. Morse code, light and power. His discussions with Preece, however, on the existence of earth currents was beginning to take hold, and shortly afterward Tesla began to conceptualize the idea of transmitting voice and even pictures by means of wireless. It has been my chief aim in presenting these results to point out phenomena or features of novelty, Tesla concluded, and to advance ideas which I am hopeful will serve as starting points of new departures. It has been my chief desire this evening to entertain you with some novel experiments. Your applause, so frequently and generously accorded, has told me that I have succeeded. At the end of the lecture, Mr. Tesla tantalizingly informed his listeners that he had shown them but one-third of what he was prepared to do, and the whole audience remained in their seats, unwilling to disperse, insisting upon more. Mr. Tesla had to deliver a supplementary lecture. It may be stated, as Mr. Tesla mentioned, but which hardly seems to be realized, that practically the whole of the experiments shown were new and had never been shown before, and were not merely a repetition of those given in America. Having seen the inventor handle such enormous voltages so unconcernedly, many of the attendees mumbled surprise among themselves, and gathered the courage to inquire how Tesla dared to take the current through his body. "It was the result of a long debate in my mind," Tesla replied, "but through calculation and reason I concluded that such currents ought not to be dangerous to life any more than the vibrations of light are dangerous. Consider a thin diaphragm in a water pipe with to and fro piston strikes of considerable amplitude. The diaphragm will be ruptured at once," the inventor explained by analogy. "With reduced strokes of the same total energy, the diaphragm will be less liable to rupture, until, with a vibratory impulse of many thousands per second, no actual current flows, and the diaphragm is in no danger of rupture. So with the vibratory current." In other words, Tesla had increased the frequency or alterations per second, but reduced the amplitude or power greatly. The wizard thereupon fired up the coil once again, sending tens of thousands of volts through or around his body, and illuminated two fluorescent tubes which he held dramatically in each hand. "As you can see," Tesla added, "I am very much alive."
"That we can see," one member responded. "But is there no pain?"
"A spark, of course, passes through my hands and may puncture the skin, and sometimes I receive an occasional burn, but that is all, and even this can be avoided if I hold a conductor of suitable size in my hand and then take hold of the current."
"In spite of your reasons," another concluded with a shake of his head, "your speculation resembles to me the feelings that a man must have before plunging off the Brooklyn Bridge."
In listening to Tesla's statement that he had only shown part of what he had prepared, the perspicacious Professor Dewar, inventor of the Dewar flask, or everyday hot and cold thermos, took the inventor at face value and realized that there was more information to impart. The wizard had simply run out of time. As a member of the board of the Royal Institution, also situated in London, Dewar knew that there were many dignitaries who missed the grand event, especially Lord Raleigh. So he set himself the task of persuading Tesla to present an encore the following evening. After the talk, Dewar escorted Tesla on a tour of the Royal Institution, where he displayed the work of his predecessors, especially Michael Faraday's apparatus.
"Why not stay for one more performance?" Dewar inquired.
"I must go to Paris," Tesla insisted, keeping foremost in his mind his desire to limit the time of his visits at each stop so that he could return to the States as quickly as possible.
"How often do you think you'll have the chance to visit the laboratories of such men as Crookes or Kelvin?"
Dewar asked in his Scottish brogue. At the same time, he invited Tesla to visit his own lab, where he was creating extremely low temperatures that approached absolute zero, and conducting pioneer studies of electromagnetic effects in such environments as liquid oxygen.
"You've already lived in Paris. Now see London."
"I was a man of firm resolve," Tesla admitted later, but succumbed easily to the forceful arguments of the great Scotchman. He pushed me into a chair and poured out half a glass of wonderful brown fluid, which sparkled in all sorts of iridescent colors and tasted like nectar.
"Now,"
Dewar declared with a twinkle in his eye and a grin that brought one of reciprocation on the face of his captive,
"you're sitting in Faraday's chair, and you're enjoying whiskey he used to drink."
In both aspects, Tesla recalled, it was an enviable experience. The next evening, I gave a demonstration before the Royal Institution. At the culmination of the lecture, much of which again was new material not presented the previous evening, but integrated into the above discussion, Tesla presented Lord Kelvin with one of his Tesla coils, and Lord Raleigh took over the lectern for the conclusion. Tesla recalled, "He said that I possessed a particular gift of discovery, and that I should concentrate upon one big idea." Coming from this ideal man of science, one who had worked out mathematical equations concerning the wavelength of light, and who had also calculated the atomic weights of many of the elements, this suggestion made a great impression. A new sense of destiny swirled through Tesla as he began to realize that he would have to figure out a way to surpass his earlier discoveries in AC. The next day, Tesla received an invitation from Ambrose Fleming to visit his lab at University College on the weekend. Fleming had been successful in setting up oscillatory discharges with a spottiswood coil as the primary and Leyden jars as the secondary, and he wanted to show Tesla his results. Having been a consultant to Edison in connection with the lighting industry, Fleming would 4 years hence work with Marconi in the development of the wireless, and a few years after that come to invent the rectifier, a device for converting the incoming electromagnetic waves of AC into DC upon entering the receiving apparatus. Having attended both lectures, Fleming congratulated Tesla heartily on your grand success. After this, no one can doubt your qualifications as a magician of the first order. The English aristocrat concluded by dubbing Tesla a member of the new fictitious Order of the Flaming Sword. Tesla had sparked the imagination of his British colleagues, and rapidly a number of them began to replicate his work and make their own advances. At Sir William Crookes's lab, Tesla constructed a coil as a gift and taught Crookes how to build Tesla coils on his own. But Crookes complained,
"The phosphorescence through my body when I hold one terminal is decidedly inferior to that given with the little one that you made for me."
As was his custom, Tesla toiled incessantly until the eclectic Crookes forced him to take a break, and at night, after dinner, the two scientists sat back and prognosticated. Topics ranged from discussions of the ramifications of their own research and potential future of the field to religion, Tesla's homeland, and metaphysics. Twirling an elongated wax moustache that fanned out like the tail feathers of a bird of paradise, the bearded mentor revealed that he had experimented in wireless communication before even Hertz began his investigations in 1889. Crookes discussed the possibility that electrical waves would be able to penetrate solid objects, such as walls, and he argued against Kelvin's suggestion that the life force and electricity were at some level identical.
"Nevertheless, electricity has an important influence upon vital phenomena, and is in turn set in action by the living being, animal or vegetable."
Here Crookes was referring to various species,
such as electric eels, iridescent sea slugs, and lightning bugs. Further speculation caused the two men to discuss the possibility that electricity could be utilized to purify water and treat sewage and industrial waste. Perhaps, Crookes suggested, proper frequencies could be generated to electrify gardens so as to stimulate growth and make crops unappealing to destructive insects. Expanding on the work of Raleigh, Crookes discussed with Tesla the possibility of setting up millions of separate wavelengths so as to ensure secrecy in communication between two wireless operators. They also reviewed the work of Helmholtz on the structure of the physical eye, noting that receptors on the retina are sensitive to one set of wavelengths, i.e. visible light, and silent to others. In the same way, a receiving device for accepting electromagnetic signals might also be so constructed to receive certain transmissions and not others. Another point at which the practical electrician should aim, Crookes said in response to one of Tesla's more dauntless speculations, is in control of weather. Such goals as the elimination of fog, or the ghastly perennial drizzle that plagued the island, and creation of great amounts of rain scheduled for specific days were also discussed. And if this was not enough, Crookes also introduced Tesla to a vigorous discussion of his experiments in mental telepathy, spiritualism, and even human levitation. As a member of the Society of Psychical Research and later president, Crookes was in good company. Other scientists who would rise to the helm of the Psychic Society included Oliver Lodge, J.J. Thomson, and Lord Rayleigh. Crookes straightforwardly presented a plethora of convincing evidence, including drawings by receivers that matched those created by senders, photographs from seances of ectoplasmic materializations generated by the clairvoyant Florence Cook, and eyewitness accounts of levitation by himself and his wife. Those statements were enough to raise the eyebrows of anyone, and they served to rattle Tesla's worldview. As a staunch materialist, up to that time, Tesla had absolutely no belief in any aspect of the field of psychic research, including relatively tame occurrences such as thought transference. But with Crookes's documentation and the support of other members of the Cognoscenti, especially Lodge, and with Tesla already exhausted from the strain of his severe schedule, the Serb's mind began to spin. He would drop off in the middle of conversations and subsequently frightened his host. The reality that he had constructed and the world of superstition he thought he had left behind when he emigrated from the old world swarmed through his brain like a hive of bumblebees and shattered mightily his world view. The pressure Tesla was under caused Crookes to offer some friendly advice in a letter. "I hope you will get away to the mountains of your native land as soon as you can. You're suffering from overwork, and if you don't take care of yourself, you'll break down. Don't answer this letter or see anyone, but take the first train." Ending the letter on a waggish note, Crookes added, "I'm thinking of going myself, but I'm only thinking of going as far as Hastings." Tesla wanted to take his advice, but he had to address the Paris Society first. Tesla crossed the English Channel during the second week of February and booked a room at the Hotel de la Paix. At his upcoming lecture before a joint conference of the Société de Physique and the Société Internationale des Électriciens, which was held on February the 19th, the inventor sought out the well-known French physician Dr. Dassonval, a pioneer in the field of diathermy. Tesla said later, "When Dr. Dassonval declared that he had made the same discovery concerning the physical effects caused by sending extremely high frequency through the body, a heated controversy relative to priority was started. The French, eager to honor their countrymen, made him a member of the Academy, ignoring entirely my earlier publication. Resolved to take steps for vindicating my claim, I met with Dr. Dassonval. His personal charm disarmed me completely, and I abandoned my intention, content to rest on the record. It shows that my disclosure antedated his, and also that he used my apparatus in his demonstrations. The final judgment is left to posterity. Since the beginning, the growth of the new art of electrotherapy and industry has been phenomenal, some manufacturers turning out daily hundreds of sets. Many millions are now in use throughout the world. The currents furnished by them have proved an ideal tonic for the human nerve system. They promote heart action and digestion, induce healthful sleep, rid the skin of destructive exudations, and cure colds and fever by the warmth they create. They vivify atrophied or paralyzed parts of the body, allay all kinds of suffering, and save annually thousands of lives. Leaders in the profession have assured me that I have done more for humanity by this medical treatment than all my other discoveries and inventions. More recently, a number of researchers, particularly Dr. Robert O. Becker of Syracuse University, have utilized electrical currents to help heal bones that have difficulty knitting. Having studied regeneration capabilities of such reptiles as salamanders, whose tails he amputated, Becker has discovered that these animals generate a particular electrical frequency, which serves somehow as a field for promoting the total regrowth of the missing appendage. By artificially duplicating the signal, Becker reports, "We've been able to produce partial limb regeneration in mammals such as rats by a similar technique, and some clinical applications are under study in human beings at this time." The Paris lecture ignited the French papers with Tesla's brilliant experiments. No man in our age has achieved such a universal scientific reputation in a single stride as this gifted young electrical engineer, the Electrical Review reported. Tesla met with a number of dignitaries while in Paris, including Prince Albert of Belgium, who was interested in supplying his country with a more economical means of distributing electric power, Monsieur Luca of the Helios Company of Cologne, with whom Tesla sold his AC motor patents for use in Germany, and André Blondel, an important theoretician in advanced theories with alternating currents. 40 years later, Blondel recalled, with immense interest and admiration, the Paris conference, and congratulated Tesla on the elegant simplicity with which he advanced his concepts in alternating current, well beyond the work of his French colleague, Desprez, and his Italian neighbor, Ferraris. Shortly after the lecture, and in a state of oblivion, associated by my peculiar sleeping spells, which had been caused by prolonged exertion of the brain, Tesla received a dispatch at the hotel informing him that his mother was dying. "I remembered how I made the long journey home without an hour of rest. Greeted in Gospic by his three sisters, all of whom were married to Serbian priests, and by his uncle Peter, the regional bishop, Tesla was in a terrible state. Entering the bedroom, he found his mother in agony. During this time, Tesla suffered from a peculiar malady similar to amnesia, where he claimed to have lost all memory of his earlier life. He also said that he slowly regained this information before his return to the States. One aspect of this episode which is noteworthy is that it occurred over a long period of time, beginning at the close of 1891 and culminating with his mother's death in April 1892. Tesla said that although he could not remember historical occurrences, he had no trouble thinking about the details of his research, including passages of text from his writings and complex mathematical formulae. Simultaneously, Tesla also experienced a psychic event, which momentarily impressed me as supernatural. I had become completely exhausted by pain and long vigilance, and one night was carried to a building about 2 blocks from our home. As I lay helpless there, I thought that if my mother died while I was away from her bedside, she would surely give me a sign. Having been influenced by my friend Sir William Crookes when spiritualism was discussed, Tesla lay in anticipation. During the whole night, every fiber in my brain was strained in expectancy. But nothing happened until early in the morning. Awakening in a swoon, I saw a cloud carrying angelic figures of marvelous beauty, one of whom gazed upon me lovingly and gradually assumed the features of my mother. The appearance slowly floated across the room and vanished, and I was awakened by an indescribably sweet song of many voices. In that instant, or certitude, I knew that my mother had just died, and that was true. Surprised, and perhaps even frightened by the clairvoyant vision, Tesla wrote to Crookes for advice. For months, and maybe even for years after, the inventor sought the external cause of this strange manifestation. Note how Tesla assumes a priori that the cause came from outside as opposed to inside, that is, from the unconscious. Although he readily accepted the concept of wireless communication, in no way was Tesla capable of allowing for the possibility that the human brain could also act as a receiver of mental vibrations. The idea of telepathy, or spiritualism for that matter, was a true threat to the paradigm he was operating from, and so Tesla manufactured a physical mechanism as the cause of his noetic experience. "To my great relief," Tesla wrote, "I succeeded, after many months of fruitless effort, in solving the conundrum." The vision of the angels rising up, Tesla attributed to the memory of an ethereal painting of the same subject which he had gazed on prior to the experience, and the sound of the serenading voices he linked to a nearby church choir that was singing for an Easter Mass. Whether or not Tesla's mother died on a Sunday morning is not known, but what is clear is that this analysis greatly relieved the tension Tesla was under, for it supported, once again, a materialistic viewpoint. A question which remains, however, is whether or not Tesla's excesses in work-related endeavors is enough to explain his onset of amnesia. One theoretician speculated that the enormous voltages that Tesla passed through his body may have contributed to the problem. From a psychoanalytic point of view, one could speculate that Tesla was repressing, that is, unconsciously but purposefully forgetting events that he did not want to remember. Possible unwanted memories included the way he felt as a child after his exalted brother died, and the recent eradication of the royalty clause with the Westinghouse Corporation. After the death of his mother, Tesla stayed on in Gospic for 6 weeks to recuperate. On the positive side, it enabled the lone son to reconfirm emotional ties to his family. It also provided Tesla with probably the only extended vacation he would ever take. He travelled to Plushki to visit his sister Marika, to Varaždin to see his uncle Pajo, and to Zagreb to lecture at the university. He sojourned to Budapest to confer with Gantz and company, as they were in the midst of constructing a substantial 1,000-horsepower alternator. He also met with a delegation of Serbian scientists who accompanied him down to Belgrade, where an audience was arranged with the king. Young Alexander I conferred upon Tesla a special title of Grand Officer of the Order of St. Sava, and the official plaque was shipped to him a few months later after his return to the States. Tesla also visited the great Serbian poet Jovan Šmaj Jovanović, and he attended an assembly where he was honored by the mayor. In front of a welcoming committee, Šmaj read his poem Pozdrav Nikolaj Tesli, and then Tesla took the podium. "There is something in me which is only perhaps illusory," Tesla began. "It is like that which often comes to young, enthusiastic persons. But if I were to be sufficiently fortunate to bring about at least some of my ideas, it would be for the benefit of all humanity." Referring back to Šmaj's poem, Tesla concluded with a message that would deeply touch the hearts of his people. "If these hopes become one day a reality, my greatest joy would spring from the fact that this work would be the work of a Serb." On his return leg, Tesla made a special trip through Prussia to see the eminent patriarch Hermann Ludwig von Helmholtz in Berlin and his most famous student Heinrich Hertz in Bonn. A bearded, youthful man with soft features, a high forehead and elongated face, Hertz had gained the world's attention by performing the first significant experiments in wireless, many of which Tesla replicated or expanded upon. In attempts to clarify the findings of James Clerk Maxwell on the nature of electromagnetic phenomena and its relationship to light and the structure of the ether, in 1886 Hertz constructed flat double-wound spiral coils, which he used in induction experiments in attempts to measure the propagation of electromagnetic waves. Hertz, like Tesla shortly after him, displayed resonance effects between primary and secondary circuits, and established the existence of standing waves with their characteristic nodes and troughs in a long straight wire. He was also able to measure the wavelength